Dooley returned to the hotel alone, but in much better spirits than he had left it. In fact, he didn't even remember the argument about Alaska until he'd been tiptoeing around Sweeney's sleeping form for about 5 minutes. Even then, he held no hard feelings. Why, if he hadn't argued over Alaska, he never would have stormed out of the hotel, never would have gone to the livery, and never would have run into George. He reckoned he owed Sweeney a word or two of gratitude. But later, he was plumb worn out. He climbed into bed with the dog right behind him, got his feet angled over the end of the mattress like he wanted, and fell asleep thinking happy thoughts. Out at the Hoskins station, it was coming noon, and all three kids, Julia included, were in the kitchen, sitting down at the big work table. They weren't complete, though. Somebody was still missing. Buckshot Bob had been gone since the morning after Monahan and Sweeney had left. May hadn't explained his absence in any detail and seemed just as puzzled as the kids, although she tried to put up a good, solid front, saying he had to go into Phoenix to pick up a piece of harness. But Julia had seen the lie right from the beginning. Why had he traveled clear into Phoenix when stages went there, then came back out, regular as clockwork? One of the drivers could have picked up a piece of harness as easily as he, and he wouldn't have had to lose days and days of work time. So where on earth had he gone? Julia could buy the Phoenix part, because they had all seen him ride off in that direction. Of course, he could have changed his heading once he got clear of him, but Phoenix was as good as any place else, for a start. But what had tempted him away? For all she'd seen of him, he was content to be out on the station with his family. He was proud of his livestock, his wife and kids, and the home they'd built on the old Mormon Trail. He seemed content. He actually seemed happy. She had a lot to think about as she ate her lunch. Sweeney awoke before Monahan. In fact, he had shaved, changed his underwear, and got clear ready for the new day before the old cowboy showed the first signs of rousing with a twitch of his stockinged foot.
Well, good morning, Sunshine.
Monahan cracked open one eye.
What the hell time is it? Who you calling Sunshine?
It's 9:30, and I don't mean nothing. Just something my mama used to say. Bless her heart.
Monahan sat up and began searching for his boots. He found them and started putting them on.
Well, it wasn't something she'd have called me. 9:30, you say?
Yeah. Why? You got a pressing appointment or something?
Not so's you'd notice. But I gotta get to the bank, and then I'm meeting someone for lunch.
You're meeting somebody for lunch?
I can eat, can't I?
Didn't know you knew anybody in Phoenix to eat with. You want to have some breakfast with me?
Wouldn't mind.
Monahan stood up and headed toward the door.
It's George Miller I'm having lunch with. Used to work with him up in Wyoming. Ran into him last night down at the livery.
Blue and Sweeney followed him out of the room. After breaking their fast at the nearest cantina, Monahan excused himself to go to the bank.
You got your voucher on you?
Why you being so worrisome, boy?
Because you're acting funny. Because you're a different person from one minute to the next.
Monahan dug into his pocket. He pulled out a wad of bills, which he placed in Sweeney's reluctant hands.
That there's about half of what I took off them Baylor boys. That should ease your mind, son.
The gesture was so unexpected that before Sweeney thought what to say, the old cowboy had disappeared down the sidewalk, headed for the bank. While Monahan waited in the short line, he took out his voucher and read it.
Pay to the order of Dooley Monahan, the sum of $500 gold, as reward for the apprehension and death of Baylor Jason, wanted for various crimes, territorial and federal, September 4th, 1869, Twin Pines, South Dakota, M. Tobin Marshall.
Monahan remembered Tobin. He could almost picture him, if he closed his eyes. When Monahan walked on up to a teller, there were four. He slid his voucher under the partition.
Like to cash this in.
The clerk, young and clean-shaven, smiled.
Yes, sir.
He took the paper and looked at it. His brows rose up until Monahan could have sworn they were going to meet his hairline.
You all right there, boy?
Yes, yes. Did you know that this paper is 3 years old, sir?
I do. Why? Ain't it good no more?
Oh, yes, sir. It certainly is good. It's just that, well, there were three Baylor brothers to begin with, right?
Yeah.
Well, I just had reason to check back through some old posters, and 3 years back, the reward was the same for all three Baylors. They were all the same amount, I mean.
Yeah.
This Marshall Tobin, he's somewhere up in South Dakota. Is that a pretty small town? Somewhere that's kind of out of the circle?
Huh?
Oh, you know, someplace that isn't exactly up to date on the news. A place that doesn't have a telegraph or anything.
Well, I guess you'd say that Twin Pines is pretty out of the way.
Just what I figured. Now, according to what I read, those boys were worth a different amount right after August the 31st.
What's that mean to me?
About $1,000, I'd say. Hang on a minute.
Monahan waited while the clerk disappeared into the manager's office, then came out and went into the vault. He came out carrying a sack, which was heavy by the way he handled it. Monahan knew what it was right off.
Gold.
He opened the sack and began to count it out, measuring a small portion on a little scale he brought up from under the desk for just that purpose. Monahan felt like jumping out in the middle of the big room, grabbing a pillar post and dancing a jig right around it, just out of joy. But he kept his features calm.
What reason you say you had to be looking through the old posters? Seems like a pretty strong coincidence to me.
Funny, ain't it? Fact is, these skunky Baylors are all gone, officially, as of today. It's not often I get to cross off a whole family of bank-robbing killers in one day, and for so much money. Boy, howdy. I'll bet this sets a record for the most money's ever paid in one day. Bet it comes close, anyway.
No, I doubt that.
The clerk stacked the gold, mostly in coins, with nuggets and a little bit of dust in front of Monahan.
There's $1,625, sir.
He pushed a piece of paper through the opening at the bottom of the partition.
If you'd sign that receipt for me, please.
Monahan took the proffered pen from his hand and signed. And then he initialed another paper that said the reason for the bank having paid out the extra money over that for which the voucher was made.
I don't know how you fellers keep all this straight. Can you give me an envelope for the nuggets?
Well, certainly.
You say you cashed out all the Baylors this very day.
That I did.
Who cashed out the other ones?
A feller.
The clerk slid out an envelope.
There you are.
Did he have a young gal with him? About 13?
No. No, I believe he was alone.
How long ago he leave?
10 minutes, maybe. Hey, why are you asking?
You best be worried about yourself, son. I figure you just paid the wrong person a whole lot of money.
Monahan snatched up his gold, stuffed his pockets, and hurried back to the main entrance, where he stopped by the security guard.
About 10 minutes ago, you see a feller leave here?
Folks leave here all the time, buddy. In fact, just as many as come in.
This one was carrying about 3,250.
Oh, that one. The feller humming and dancing. Sure, I recall him all right. He was shaking hands with everybody who crossed his path, celebrating his good fortune. Accidentally run himself into the Baylor boys, he said. He'd come out on top.
Where'd he go?
Said he was going to Driscoll's bar, and that he was buying.
Monahan walked quietly into Driscoll's, sidled up to the bar, and ordered a beer. Before the bartender slid it down in front of him, Dooley saw Buckshot Bob at the other end, joking with two cowboys he took to be town dudes dressed up for the day. Monahan took a sip of his beer and started toward Bob, waiting to be recognized. It didn't take long. Fear washed over the man's face, answering Monahan's question before it was asked. He quickly tamped it down and flashed a big, innocent smile. Smiling back, Monahan raised his glass and made a mock toast in the air. Bob started over toward him, carrying his own beer. His pockets bulged with the gold coins he was carrying. Buckshot Bob had no call to be in the saloon, even if it was a nice one, spending Julia's money. He had given his word that he'd bring her along to claim her reward. That part of his promise he'd broken for certain, and it sure looked like he was going to break his word straight down the line. But Monahan couldn't prove Bob was planning on stealing all of Julia's money, not unless he got a confession out of him. He seriously doubted Bob was stupid enough to just give him one. Monahan was torn. Buckshot Bob was his memory. He had nearly 10 years of Monahan's life condensed into bite-sized chunks he could reel out like so much fish line any time it was asked for, and the old cowboy surely did appreciate it. But he didn't appreciate it so much from a fellow who was stealing Miss Julia's money. Stealing money from a 13-year-old kid when it was all she had in the world. Sure, he was giving her lodging, but to Monahan's mind, that was just something you did, wasn't it?
Well, howdy, Dooley. What brings you to Driscoll's?
Followed you in. I was just up at the bank.
The bank?
Where'd you come by all that gold you was paying the bartender with, Bob?
Oh, I had her saved up for a rainy day. Don't get myself into town much as I'd like. Ready for another beer?
I'm fine. You come in to cash Julia's vouchers?
I surely did. Got it right here. It's a hell of a lot of money, Dooley. They gave it to me all in gold.
Monahan leaned back against the bar and looked out the window. He was surprised to see Sweeney was out there with Blue.
Just a minute, Bob.
Monahan put his beer mug on the bar.
I'll be jiggered if that ain't my Blue. Hold on there a second.
He slipped through the swinging doors and came to a stop next to Sweeney.
Boy, howdy, Butch. What brings you out this way?
Well, me and Blue didn't have anything to do, so we started walking and window shopping, and we ended up here.
Well, we got us a little problem.
Well, look who's here. Butch Sweeney.
As Buckshot Bob stepped out onto the sidewalk, Sweeney tried to wipe the surprised look off his face.
Imagine that. Dooley just ran into me in there. Now he runs into you out here. It's like a family reunion. Tell you what, let's all go inside and have a drink. On me.
Yeah, fine with me.
Apparently, a free drink was a welcome offer any time of the day. Monahan checked his pocket watch as he followed them inside. It read 10:47, giving him less than an hour and a quarter to figure out what Buckshot Bob was up to, and then hike another half mile up the pike to meet George Miller for lunch at the Adams Hotel. By 12:30, Sweeney was halfway through a roasted prairie hen and wondering if Monahan had taken leave of what little remained of his senses. He wasn't dining with them, preferring to take his lunch with his friend George over at the Adams. But before he left, during a moment when Bob had gone to see a man about a horse, Dooley had filled Sweeney in on Buckshot Bob and his alleged thievery. Alleged, as far as Sweeney was concerned, because he hadn't seen a single thing that made him think Bob had suddenly come into money. He'd ordered the next to cheapest thing on the menu, and currently sat across the table fiddling listlessly with a drying tortilla.
So, Bob, you staying at a hotel?
Don't know. Reckon it's too late in the day to start back now?
That might be, but why don't you come on over and stay at the place where me and Dooley took us a room? Place is clean anyway. Old Dooley's real keen on a clean place.
Why, that'd be real good of you and Dooley to take me in tonight, but I think I ought to be hitting the road.
No, I don't think so. It's getting too late to think about starting back now. I think you best bide out to the Russell Hotel with us.
Nope. Think I'd better be getting on my way. It's a long piece out to the ranch for a man riding alone.
Sweeney glanced out the window and saw Monahan and another fella at the hitching rail.
Well, I guess I'll let you talk it out with Dooley. He's coming right now.
Julia stood up from the kitchen table with a purpose in mind. She excused herself and wandered outside. She scooped up her saddlebags. She'd put them under the back stoop earlier in the day and made her way to the barn where she found Parnell dozing in his stall. That was one good thing about Buckshot Bob. He'd let her take really good care of her horse since she'd been there. But that didn't make up for what she'd discovered when she looked in her hidey hole this morning. There was a place in the girl's bedroom, in the corner down by the floor, where part of the baseboard came up like a secret panel to expose a little nook where she imagined previous tenants had hidden their valuables from marauding Apaches or bandits. It was the place where she had put her vouchers, along with the other papers she'd been given in Yuma. But the vouchers weren't there anymore. She had taken every last paper out of the hidey hole, along with every last broken piece of toy and each scrap of torn doll clothing, but they weren't there. She knew who had them, all right. As far as she was concerned, The missing vouchers had Buckshot Bob's name written all over them, if you could write on something that had gone missing. It was then that she'd made up her mind. She didn't know her way around, but she thought she'd learned enough about camping in the open to get her to Phoenix. At least she knew beyond a shadow of a doubt that Phoenix was east of there, and that only one road led that way. And so she saddled up Parnell and tied her saddlebags on behind. She took water and a couple of measures of grain and led him clear of the barn. Once she stepped onto her horse, she set out with nobody seeing her except young Robbie.
Where are you going? Gonna go find your daddy? Tell your mama not to worry, okay?
Robbie nodded, she waved, and that was that. The second she saw him go back inside the house, she urged Parnell to go faster and soon left the station behind. After lunch, Monahan, Sweeney, Buckshot Bob, and George Miller, who'd given Monahan a ride down from the Adams Hotel, all walked up to the bank, where Monahan made sure Bob opened a savings account for Miss Julia and then put her money, every single cent that he still had on him anyway, in it. Miraculously, he was only about $20 short. Monahan made up the difference out of his own pocket. The clerk made up a passbook for Julia, and Monahan took possession of it, saying that he'd hold it for her. Bob tried to fight him on it, but when even George Miller agreed that Dooley should have possession, Bob gave up. It had finally become obvious to him that everybody was wise to what he had done. They were just too gracious to accuse him out loud, and that he'd best shut up about it. Monahan had decided to set out west the first thing in the morning and take it to her himself. It hadn't occurred to him what Sweeney was going to do, but George Miller had signed on for the ride, saying he was going to California anyway. George was good enough company for him. After a good dinner downstairs in the hotel dining room, Monahan, Sweeney, and Bob retired early. Night fell, and Buckshot Bob wasn't very happy about the situation. But Monahan figured there wasn't too much Bob could do about it. Morning was going to come all too soon. The men set out from Phoenix in the morning. They were all in high spirits, except Buckshot Bob, for obvious reasons. Monahan was enthused and grateful for the company of Sweeney, who was happy to still be tagging along, and especially George Miller, who had plenty of stories about the old spread up in Wyoming, which he willingly shared at great length. According to George, Monahan had been quite a hand with the beef stock and with the ladies. The old cowboy flushed deep red when George told the story of Monahan and Miss Franklin, a popular schoolmarm with whom he'd kept company for some time. Monahan remained silent on the subject. Sweeney figured Monahan was just as hungry for the details, but he'd probably not shared those with George at the time. No one knew what became of Miss Franklin either. It was a real shame that the one person who would have remembered the most didn't recall a blessed thing about the incident. After a long and full day on the trail, and about 20 miles under hoof, they made camp and settled at last into a sleep. Sweeney took first watch to make certain Buckshot Bob didn't bolt, and woke Monahan at about 2 a.m. to take over for him. They set out the next morning in good spirits, although Monahan was a little groggy. George Miller told more tales about the old cowboy's past up in Wyoming. Sweeney listened, rapt, as George went on for hours about the beauties of the land around Yellowstone, and the smoking lakes and the geysers. He told the tale of Monahan and the grizzly bear, Monahan won, Monahan and the rabid lobo, Monahan won again, and Monahan and the lumberjack's daughter, though that match had a more questionable outcome. George talked and talked all through the morning ride and lunch, and then the afternoon and supper, until he was so hoarse he couldn't talk anymore. Sweeney, who was thrilled to finally get to hear more of the tales of the old cowboy's past, had forgotten all about his earlier longing to get himself shed of Monahan, to get free and quit getting shot at. Well, his shoulder tried to remind him, but he regarded that as just a battle scar, something that marked his hide to remind him of his brush with greatness. He was certain there'd be more. At least, he kept reminding himself that the past repeated itself. After all, he couldn't seem to get shed to Julia, could he? They ran into her just before they stopped for the night. She had already stopped and was off to the side of the road. Her horse was stripped of tack and grinding blissfully at a nose bag filled with corn and oats. Julia herself was across the road, holed up behind a patch of prickly pear with a rifle to her shoulder and an irritated look on her face. She came out soon enough, though, and added her prairie hen to their rabbits and quail. They made a tasty stew and ate it, while George finished his day's tale of Monahan, then stretched out on the desert floor for the night. Sweeney was standing watch first. Well, sitting watch, anyway. He had to admit, if only to himself, that running into Julia again wasn't half as awful as he'd thought it would be. Besides, she had some salt in her saddlebags, which he and Monahan had forgotten to bring, and she did pull together a decent stew. He thought she had taken the news about Buckshot Bob's betrayal like a true stoic. She hadn't even been mad about it. Of course, it helped that she'd already guessed that he was a thief, and she was just glad they'd run into him in the city and got things handled so she didn't have to. She accepted her bank book from Monahan, quickly inspected it, and then, behind a clump of cactus, secreted it on her person. She was no fool, all right. And she'd asked about Sweeney's shoulder. That was real nice of her, he thought, especially since nobody else cared in the slightest. She was asleep on the other side of the fire, with Blue contentedly curled up on her blanket. She told Sweeney to wake her at midnight, and she'd spell him and Monahan, shortening their watch hours. Actually, he mused, she was a real peach. He settled down for the night and tried to keep his eyes open.
Just till midnight.
Later that night, Monahan sat in the pre-dawn desert haze facing west, watching the sun breach the eastern horizon by its reflection in the broken glass that lined the old Mormon trail. Everyone else was asleep, including the dog, who had wakened at around 4 when the old cowboy got up to relieve Julia. Blue made a circuit around the sleepers while she settled in to sleep, and then returned to lie on her blanket. He'd claimed it as his own sometime during the course of the night. Monahan was awfully glad they'd run across the girl, and grateful for her help on night guard, too. The half nights of sleep were harder on his old bones than he liked to admit. At least with her around, he had to spend fewer hours on guard. It surely did make a difference. As he sipped his coffee, he felt a dull pain in his shoulder. It seemed like there wasn't a move, either big or small, that he could make without some part reminding him that he'd broken a bone or ripped a muscle or gotten into a one-sided argument with a rank bronc or a crabby steer. It wasn't fair. But then, what in his life was fair? He puzzled over this for quite a long time. Long enough that the deep morning shadows were erased and light flooded the desert, bringing with it the morning birds and the snakes. The latter he couldn't stand, especially when a rattler climbed out of the brush and stretched himself out on the bumpy surface of the road to warm in the pre-noon sun. Snakes had as much right as anybody to live, but not when they came so close to him. He dragged himself up off his pallet and drew his gun.
Jeez, Jehoshaphat! Who's trying to kill us?
Buckshot Bob twisted his head like an owl. George grabbed his pistol and aimed it out toward nothing. And even little Julia threw her arms tight around Blue's neck and stared wide-eyed.
Snake.
The camp deflated, as surely as if it had been a balloon that he'd suddenly popped with his one-word explanation. Sweeney dropped back to the ground. Bob's head stopped swiveling, George's pistol lowered to earth, and Julia released the dog. They reached the station a day and a half later, and poor May, always left to worry, was thrilled to see them, particularly Bob and Julia. Although Monahan had made his companions promise to keep their mouths shut in front of May, he took her aside later and explained his reasons for riding back with Bob.
I don't figure to know if there's anything funny going on betwixt you and your hubby, May. It ain't my business to second guess. Now, old Bob feels pretty dang bad about this whole ruckus, I'm guessing. But, you best keep an eye on him for a while.
The old cowboy folded his arms around her. They'd known each other since she was a little girl of 11 when they chased chickens together on her daddy's ranch. Of course, many of those intervening years were cloudy for him, but they both knew the warmth of a long friendship.
There, there.
May was so shaken and embarrassed by her husband's actions that she had no words. Monahan understood without being told. He simply held her, and she let him. A short time later, Monahan wandered out to the front stoop and sat down. Sweeney was already out there, leaning listlessly on the porch rail, watching George roam around the front yard with his gaze downcast.
Looking for snakes?
Yeah.
He find anything yet?
Nothing. What's next?
Dunno right now. Ask me later.
The young cowboy shrugged and went back to watching George Miller, who was surreptitiously keeping an eye on the horizon where Buckshot Bob was out after cattle with his dog. Although he hadn't known Bob earlier, he was full of Bob theories and more than full of ideas about where he and Monahan would go once they had things wrapped up. Monahan was still concerned about Buckshot Bob. Bob was a good man at heart, and he'd been tempted and nearly fallen into sin, but he'd got himself real embarrassed in the process. Monahan figured he'd never try to steal anything from anybody again as long as he lived. He just wasn't the type. But Dooley was the type to fret over things and people long after they needed fretting over. It was just the sort of man he was, or at least the type he used to be. George knew all about the old dream to go to Alaska. Monahan had been harping on it since they were up in Wyoming, and he'd sold George on the idea years ago. But he hadn't heard mention of it lately. Was it possible Dooley had already got himself up there and back and found nothing? George didn't think so. Monahan had been too certain sure of himself and about Alaska, and he was too pig-headed to fail at something he was so convinced of. Besides, George had been keeping tabs on news coming out of the frozen territory, and as best he could tell, there were still men striking it rich up there. Just not as many as had gone to California. Alaska was a forbidding place, all right. He'd heard there was snow on the ground all year round, and then if you accidentally dumped a bucket of water outside, you could skate on it within 15 minutes. Of course, according to Monahan, all that was blown way out of proportion. Oh, it was cold all right, but there were regular seasons of the year, and yes, summer too. He'd had books and papers to back up what he'd claimed, all kept on a makeshift set of shelves beside his bunk. George wondered whatever had become of the books, all those tales of Alaska and its wildlife and terrain. He shook his head. Monahan had probably just got up one morning, forgot he had them, and wandered off.
You find anything?
Nope, nothing.
Monahan's eyes flicked out toward the horizon, where he spotted a distant Bob coming in with about a half a dozen cattle. His dog Daisy June was with him, keeping the cattle bunched up and headed the right way. Except for her coloring and her smaller size, she was a lot like Blue. George would have bet hard money that she could have gone out by herself and rounded up those cows just fine. But then he supposed Bob needed something to do, something to get him away from the house and them, to think things over. And so he had let his dog take care of finding the cows. Time seemed to drag on. Sweeney had almost given up entirely and put Chili out to pasture. George was chafing at the bit, but managed to keep himself under control, just barely. And Monahan seemed more relaxed, more content than Julia had ever seen him. She didn't know what impression she was giving the others, and frankly didn't care. But secretly, she was hoping the old cowboy had forgotten all about leaving her there and would pack her along once he got it in his mind to move on. Even May and Buckshot Bob seemed more relaxed. They were almost back to normal. Well, what was normal for them, anyway. And May was cooking great big breakfasts again. Julia had to admit that was her favorite part of the whole deal, May's cooking, especially those shoot-the-works breakfasts. Monahan always called them that, anyway. She figured he'd just about nailed it. May always made toast, plus French toast, bacon, and eggs, and then rotated in ham, biscuits with honey, beans, chicken, fritters, leftovers from the night before, and some kind of fruit juice, milk, and coffee with each breakfast. Those meals were something to write home about. She didn't, of course, being without a home, without someone to read her letters. If she was left behind here, she might one day write to Monahan, but he wasn't paying any attention to anything these days, except did he get enough sleep, and was General Grant getting enough grain? Anyway, it seemed that way to her. The truth was, though, Monahan was thinking a powerful lot. He was consumed night and day, and if he didn't show it, well, he was self-trained to keep those cards close to his vest. Although he knew he was supposed to leave, and that his leaving had a purpose, he just couldn't recall what it was. He sat for long hours by himself out on the front stoop, smoking cigarettes and staring at the same knothole on the same post, trying to remember what in the blue-eyed world it was. But not a blessed thing came to mind. He even spent 4 hours out by the corral talking nonsense to General Grant, but nothing occurred to him, except that perhaps he was getting a little heavy-handed with the grain. The general looked to be putting on a bit of extra weight. 3 days later, and almost 2 weeks after they'd arrived at the Hoskins stage stop, George took the bit in his teeth. He was tired of waiting on Monahan and almost ready to go up north on his own, even though the prospect nearly froze his gizzard, literally, every time the thought occurred to him. But it was time he talked about it. He wasn't getting any younger. After breakfast, he waited until Monahan got situated out on the front porch before walking casually up to him.
Gonna be a hot one.
Mm-hmm.
Want to talk to you about Alaska.
Woo! Why don't you say something before this?
George's jaw dropped, but no sound came out. Monahan dug into his pocket like a man possessed, yanked out his wallet, thumbed it open, and pulled out a worn clipping.
Alaska! Alaska! Yahoo! I'm going to Alaska, where there ain't no poison bugs nor sharp-fanged rattlers to pester a man who's looking for gold.
Within the hour, Julia was scrambling to pack her saddlebags before they left without her. Sweeney was already out back saddling Chili, and George and Monahan were doing the same with their horses. Sitting on the bed was Maggie, her head propped on her fists.
But why do you have to go, too? Don't have to. I want to go. But why? Why can't you just stay here with us? Because Dooley is my family. Can't explain it any better than that. I'll be back sometime, Maggie, honest. But gotta go.
Julia bent down and brushed her lips across Maggie's cheek.
I'll miss you.
The truth be told, Julia did a little crying herself. But she always took care to wipe away her tears before anyone saw them. They were almost on the far western horizon when she made it to the road. It sparkled ahead of her like two lines of giant broken diamonds in the sun. She rode between them as fast as she could, with her head down so her Irish center hair mixed with Parnell's black mane. It flew and fluttered in the wind like an ebony and scarlet banner.
Well!
She finally drew up and fell into pace with them.
About time.
Howdy to you, Miss Julia.
We're all glad you could make it, honey. Get your bank book.
You fellas sure cut out of there in a big toot. Where are we going in such an all-fired hurry?
Going west, then north.
To where?
To Alaska. Gonna make our fortunes.
Oh, Alaska.
She was a child of the west and had heard of the place, of course. But also being a native of the southern clime, she couldn't see why anybody would want to go up there, especially on purpose. But she kept her mouth shut, figuring some things either played out or disappeared over time. She didn't soon find out which was the case, because they continued on in silence, then stopped for the night in much the same way they always had. Monahan's mood continued to be high, at least according to his expression, and George was the same. It wasn't until they'd gone to sleep, and Blue had curled up on Julia's bedroll, that Sweeney whispered across the campfire.
Hey, Julia.
Reluctantly, she forced her eyes open.
What?
Dooley say anything to you? About where we're going, I mean?
Both him and George think we're going to Alaska, the loons, of all the places.
We are. I'm asking, did they say anything else?
I don't know a damn thing more than you do. Now let me go back to sleep.
Julia pulled the blanket up to cover her face and closed her eyes. The following week, they were still spending long days in the saddle, traveling north along the coast. It was just like Dooley had said it would be, and so she kept her mouth shut. She was still uncertain as to their ultimate goal, but she was learning to live with uncertainty. They were riding along when Monahan suddenly led them over to the east until the ocean was clean out of sight, until they couldn't even hear the waves breaking anymore. Julia got more and more tense with each step the horses took. She figured they'd finally come near their goal, and at any moment Monahan would reveal it to her. But they just kept riding northward, gradually up a seemingly endless rocky slope, and then over to the west once again without any sign from Monahan except for the occasional wave of his hand. Julia was on the verge of calling a halt once and for all when she heard the first whispers of the sea pushing into her range of hearing. They were indeed approaching the ocean again, but at a much higher vantage point. They continued on for what seemed like hours until it began to grow dusky. Their shadows grew long at their sides, and the sun began to lower itself below the far end of the ocean. Ahead, Monahan's arm rose up, and everyone reined in. She was hungry and chilly, and therefore grateful. The first thing she did once she dismounted was to pull open her saddlebags and pull out her jacket. They must have traveled farther north than she thought. She was right, as she and Sweeney finally discovered as they enjoyed some of George Miller's stew that evening.
All right, I got something to say. You've come a long way with me, and I know you probably noticed we finally ran out of west. And now we're headed north. Well, we managed to get ourselves almost all the way to San Francisco over the last week. And by tomorrow afternoon, we'll be on the outskirts. I'm real glad you all stuck with George and me. So, if we get into town by nightfall, after I get hostlers to take care of the horses, I'll make sure we all have restaurant meals to eat, real outhouses to use, and hotel beds to sleep in.
Jehoshaphat!
Ooh, that'll be a treat.
Well, it'll be a treat for a few days anyway.
Julia cranked up her courage.
And then what?
Well, that's up to you.
She and Sweeney just sat there, silenced, she supposed, by their own stupidity. She looked over at him and he looked at her, and then she suddenly found her voice again.
What do you mean, Dooley? Suppose I choose to say that we all ride right into the Pacific Ocean.
Then I figure you're not half as smart as I thought.
That about sums it up, I'd say.
Monahan topped off George's stew and then held up the ladle.
Anybody else?
Julia and Sweeney held out their plates. They rode into San Francisco the following afternoon and settled the horses at the Simmons livery, then signed the register at the Dewdrop Inn. As promised, Monahan signed for all the rooms, even George's.
Now, you all go get cleaned up so I can take you to dinner.
While the others set off with keys in hands, Sweeney lingered in the lobby, thinking. The whole thing made him uneasy. He'd never seen Monahan so happy and footloose. Admittedly, they hadn't known each other long, but they'd gone through enough together that it should make up for a lost year or two, maybe even three. Anyhow, he figured it that way. Dooley ought to be telling him more, because it bothered him royally that he still had no clear idea where they were headed. He'd heard the name Alaska, but he'd heard of other places, too, without knowing anything about them. When he asked George, he was as slippery as Monahan. Dinner was the time to press for the rest of the information. He planned to do just that, no ifs, ands, or buts. After cleaning up, Sweeney and Julia met in the hallway and walked down the stairs to find Monahan and George waiting for him in the lobby. George opened the door for everybody, and Monahan ushered them up the street. Two blocks down from the hotel, they entered Morgan's Fine Dining. Halfway to a table, Monahan stopped, stock still.
Oops.
Almost running into him, Sweeney grabbed the old cowboy's shoulder to steady himself.
Well, what's wrong, Dooley?
You see that feller sitting over there by the window?
Yeah, what about him? You know him from someplace?
Don't know. Something about him, though.
Monahan gave a last glare to the table at which the man sat, then continued on after Julia, George, and the waiter. Sweeney followed, and they were all seated. Monahan continued to stare at the stranger's table.
Why don't you go on over there?
Bad idea.
Sweeney was getting disgusted. It was bad enough when Monahan got spooked on the road, but in a big town with folks all around who could hear him, that was plain embarrassing. He ordered along with the others, and until their dinner arrived, Monahan was dividing his attention evenly between the table across the room and his own. Dinner itself, well, that captured his attention entirely. It distracted Sweeney completely, too. It was steak, a juicy tenderloin, thick and wrapped in bacon, and lobster, which he was convinced he wasn't going to like. The lobster was clearly a favorite of Julia and George, but he waited until the others had eaten at least half of theirs, watching their reactions before he tried his first bite. But it turned out that he was crazy for it, too, and swallowed down every last butter-soaked scrap of the sweet stuff. Who would have thought something that looked so much like a big old water bug could taste so rich and good? They cleaned their plates, leaving only the empty remains of the cracked lobster shells. Julia leaned back in her chair with her hands splayed out over her stomach.
Holy craps! That was G-O-O-D with a capital good.
Kind of makes you wonder how inland folks survive without it, don't it?
Sure does, Julie.
Monahan pushed back from the table and stood.
We going already?
Nah, you stay on and finish your supper, George. I just remembered something I gotta do. See you back at the hotel.
When Monahan told them he remembered something, he wasn't fooling. He had finally figured out why the man at the other table seemed so familiar, and he had remembered the man's name, Len Dobbs. Dobbs was a little grayer of hair, but it was him all right. By now, Len had gotten about 2 blocks up the street, right out in front of the hotel, in fact. Monahan scurried to close the distance, but Len was moving on to the livery stable where General Grant was boarded.
Dobbs had best not try to steal my horse.
Horse thievery was what Len Dobbs had been guilty of years ago. But it was what Monahan had been accused of when the horse thief had skipped town.
Yeah, it was just my luck to get arrested for stealing my own horse.
That was back in... Monahan had to think about it. Cheyenne, wasn't it? He remembered it was awful cold, and the horse in question was a gray Missouri fox trotter that just happened to be his.
This is not gonna be like Silver King all over again.
Silver King was the horse's name. It had taken Monahan nearly a month to get hold of the fellow who'd sold the horse to him so he could prove his ownership. Of course, by that time, Len Dobbs and Silver King were long gone. It was kind of odd that the man was in San Francisco, but Monahan wasn't about to look a gift horse in the mouth, so to speak. He wanted a few choice words with old Len. Certainly, he wanted to give him a well-deserved punch in the mouth. It was the least he could do. He kept a distance between himself and Dobbs, and as he watched, Dobbs's figure vanished into the stable.
Damn it. That mushy-faced strawwalker's still up to no good.
Monahan walked quickly down the street toward the livery. He paused outside the wide doors, listening and thinking. Slowly, he drew his gun. Holding it level with his waist, he stepped into the soft light spilling through the wide doorway. He saw no one inside. Not one blessed soul. He looked all around, shook his head, and then slowly slid his Colt back into its holster.
I could have sworn. Well, hell.
He must be even dizzier than he figured, thinking he'd seen old Lenny Dobbs here in San Francisco. Now that was a laugh. Dobbs wouldn't fit in San Francisco any more than Monahan would fit in at a monastery. He made his way over to General Grant, who was half asleep in his stall, with his knees locked and his eyes half-lidded.
Well, how you doing, old son?
One of the general's eyelids rose a bit, and the ear on that side pivoted toward him. He smiled.
Didn't figure you was sleeping.
He held out his hand to rub the horse.
You didn't see anybody come in here.
There was a sudden searing pain at the top of his head, and he collapsed unconscious on the straw-strewn floor. They'd all had so much dinner that everyone retired to the rooms Dooley had provided to let all that good food settle. Everyone but Dooley. But it wasn't the first time he'd just remembered something he'd forgotten and run off to attend to it. Julia was pretty sure she wouldn't be attending to anything but sleep after she finished the solitaire game she was playing on the bedspread.
Who is it?
It's me, Butch.
Come on in, the door's not locked.
You seen Dooley?
Not since dinner. You check his room?
He ain't in there. He ain't anywhere. I was hoping you had him.
It's early yet, Butch. He's probably off just doing Dooley stuff.
Dooley stuff?
Oh, you know what I mean. Stuff that he doesn't think we're ready for yet, or stuff that he thinks is going to be too hard on our tender eyes or ears, or just things he doesn't think are any of our business.
She put a red jack on a black queen.
I wondered when you're gonna see that.
Yeah, like you could see it from over there.
Blue chose that moment to go and sit next to Julia.
Hi to you, too.
She looked over at Sweeney again. He glanced around the room and then at her.
What are you looking at? He ain't in here and I don't know where he is.
Okay. Sorry to bother you.
He turned to go back into the hall.
Butch?
Yeah?
Could you take Blue out? He ain't been out since before we went to supper.
Yeah, sure. Come on, Blue.
The dog ran out into the hall.
Thanks, Butch.
Yeah, I'll bring him back.
Hey, shut the door, will you?
Sorry.
Thank you.
Anytime.
Smiling, she went back to her cards, thinking that she should have asked him to snag a newspaper from the pile out in the lobby. But that might have tested his patience. Monahan came back into consciousness. He was all alone in a strange place. Although he quickly recognized General Grant, nothing else was even slightly familiar. His head hurt, and he was pretty sure somebody had hit him. He quickly went through his own pockets and found nothing that contained a name, but discovered that he was practically rich. There was over $1,000 in his wallet. Discovering that stopped him from searching it further at that moment. Why was he carrying that much cash money? Was he a gambler? Or maybe a rancher who just sold some stock? He stood up a few minutes later and saddled General Grant. He didn't actually recall the entirety of General Grant's name. Oh, he was certain about the general part, but confused as to the specifics. Lee, Sherman, Grant, maybe Custer. He'd figure it out in time. The dog surprised him. He whirled and raised his arm, intending to do whatever it took to fight off the animal. But when he faced it, he dropped his arm immediately. He knew this dog, and it seemed the dog surely knew him.
Well, I'll be jiggered.
He pegged it immediately as a butt-wiggling, bob-tailed California shepherd. He figured he was safe in calling it that, since he'd seen a little sign on the inside of the door that led him to believe he was in California.
You mind?
So far as he knew, he didn't have any sheep or cattle that needed herding, and no need for a trick dog either. But he might have had in the past. He was pretty darn certain that the dog belonged to him anyway. He put a hand down and stroked the short, silky hairs on its head and ears. The dog smiled wide and pushed up against his hand.
Well, you sure are, ain't you? I ain't doing so bad this time. Hell, I ain't been conscious more than 10 minutes, and I already got money, a dog, and a horse. I also got a goose egg on the back of my head. Somebody walloped me, sure as shooting.
And then he got to wondering how he could remember the same thing had happened before, but not recall what came in the middle. He had no idea why he'd been hit, or why they'd left him in the out-of-the-way stable without even going through his pockets. And how the heck did he know the stable was out of the way?
I'll figure it out later. Come on, General.
He mounted the General, to whom he'd already tied all the saddlebags and paraphernalia he thought belonged to him, and ambled out of the stable with the dog at the General's heels.
Sorry to disturb your rest, General, but I figure when just about everything comes up cockeyed, it's in a man's best interest.
and his horses and dogs, too, to get his tail out of town. Yes, sir. He best be heading out.
A little past midnight, he made camp and sat down to sort things out.
Now, why in tarnation did I ever bring my backside clear to San Francisco? Don't reckon you got much to say to that or anything else, do you, boy? Let's see. Been most of the way through my wallet. Found out my name's Monahan. Dooley Monahan. I gotta say, I like the Monahan. Good and strong, you know. But I'm not crazy about the Dooley part of it. Well, I suppose I'll get used to it.
He leaned back on his bedroll.
Guess we got you figured out, too. If that's your old bowl I found. Blue's what it says. Yup, I reckon that's you, all right. Fits you, anyhow.
He still hadn't figured out why in the world his first instinct had been to get himself out of town as fast as possible, without even thinking about it.
Good night there, Blue. I imagine we'll figure out more of the story come morning. Sweet dreams, old son.
Monahan pulled his hat down over his eyes. It wasn't more than a minute before he felt the dog sneak onto his blanket and curl up against his leg, with his silky head and throat stretched out across his thigh. Beneath the brim of his hat, Monahan smiled. Before she was ready to face the new day, there was an unwelcome knock on Julia's door.
Ugh, go away! Ugh, all right, hold your horses, I'm coming.
It was Sweeney.
What in the hell are you doing out here?
Where's Dooley? Where is he?
Quit asking like I got him hidden here or something. Wait, where's Blue?
That's my next question. Last night he run off while I was out walking him. Hell, I figured he caught Dooley's scent or something. I figured he'd come on back to the hotel with the tail of Dooley's shirt twixt his teeth. I must have fell asleep whilst I was waiting, because I woke up this morning and found no dog and no Dooley either.
All right, come on in before you start bothering the neighbors.
He walked to the upholstered chair over by the window and sat.
You ain't seen him at all since dinner?
Nope.
How about George? He seen anything?
Again, nope.
She sat down on the bed to think. If Sweeney was right, and if he had exhausted every single possibility, it could only mean that something had happened to Monahan. Either somebody had pulled him into a fight and he'd taken off, or he'd gotten thumped upside the head by mistake or accident. She took some comfort in the fact that the dog was gone, too, although she would miss Blue almost as much as she'd miss Monahan.
You checked the livery? To see about...
I already been there. His horse, his saddlebags, his gear, they're all gone. Just poof, just like that.
Part of Julia was relieved. At least Monahan had his belongings, as well as Blue.
Why don't you go wait in the hall while I get dressed? We'll go find George and maybe get some breakfast.
George, normally an affable sort, wasn't happy about having been awakened so early in the morning. But he wasn't happy about Monahan either. He got right to the point.
All right, you two, just hold your damn horses.
They were seated at a nearby cafe, and the waiter had already taken their order.
I only got one question for you. Who's going north with me?
Julia just stared at him. She couldn't believe he was thinking about himself at a time like this. Sweeney sat beside her with his chin on his chest, doubtless thinking the same thing.
Well, it sounds to me like old Dooley's been took with one of his spells again. Ain't the first time, and I don't figure it'll be the last. You two best get used to it. He's just gone.
No.
I know you've had a tough go of it, but it's gonna be even tougher if you can't let loose old Dooley's ghost.
But...
No buts about it, girl. And he is a ghost, or same as once he's gone and got his memory all fuddled. Ain't nothing you nor anybody else can do to fix it. Why, it was a full-on pure D miracle that I ran across him like I did, and he near about shot me in the process. Now, you can go on up to Alaska with me, either one of you or both of you, or you can go anywhere else you want. Try to track down old Dooley or whatever. I ain't gonna stop you.
I reckon I'll go on up north with you, George. Guess I don't have no place else to go.
Arrangements were made for the mute and defeated Julia to head back south with a band of wagoners that day. She rode stone-faced in a Conestoga with Parnell tied on behind. As for Sweeney, he spent the rest of the day searching the streets for any sign of Monahan, but sadly came up empty. That evening, he left with George on a tramp steamer headed for Alaska with a stop-off planned in Seattle. By the time they left the docks, Dooley Monahan was almost to Virginia City. Dusk had overtaken him, Blue, and General Grant in a little town called Ogden, and he decided to spend the night. He signed the hotel's ledger and settled into his sheets with no further memory of where he'd come from or what he'd come out of or why he was carrying so much money. He simply decided to let it alone. After all, nobody would be looking for an old cowhand and a blue Merle cow dog in a wide spot in the road like Ogden, now would they? The Trail West is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 2013, William W. Johnstone, all rights reserved. Published by arrangement with the Kensington Publishing Corporation, all rights reserved. Production copyright 2013, The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. Unauthorized download or duplication is prohibited. Performed by Tara Tasel Ford, Tim Getman, Drew Copus, Casey Platt, David Coyne, Michael John Casey, Christopher Graybill, Tim Carlin, Dylan Lynch, Richard Rowan, Thomas Keegan, Michael Glenn, Gary Tells, Bobby Aselford, Kimberly Gilbert, Scott McCormick, and Nanette Savard. Additional red shirts by The Dead Giveaways. Directed by Terrence Aselford. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Justin Wirtz and Roderick Bridges. Book adapted for graphic audio by Nathaniel Perry. With original music by Johann Detweiler. If you enjoyed The Trail West, read the Pinnacle Edition. Visit www.kensingtonbooks.com and be sure to look for William W. Johnstone's Savage Texas series, available from Graphic Audio at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloadable extras, audio guides, and podcasts. Keep listening for previews of other thrilling titles in Graphic Audio.
Rusty, you and me, we're going to shut down the saloon starting at midnight the first.
It ain't gonna be we, Sheriff. It's gonna be you alone. I'm resigning at 11:59 the evening of December 31st, and that's not negotiable unless the dry law's repealed. I aim to live, and I'm just bullet fodder if I keep the badge.
Now, you listen close and get that jail ready, because the Women's Temperance Union is gonna fill it to overflowing!
Uh-huh. My ma used to tell me that women get notions.
If lily-livered men won't do it, women will. We're organized and ready. When midnight New Year's Eve rolls around, we'll attack.
You can't do it with brooms, ma'am. You'll get shot.
Not even the most corrupt and craven and debased male in Doubtful will shoot women.
I wouldn't be too sure of it. My deputy, Rusty, he told me he'd as soon shoot a woman as a man.
Well then, I admire Rusty. He sees us as equals. Now, the good souls in the Women's Temperance Union have divided into three woman militias. Three militia women for each saloon. Here's how it'll play out. At midnight, we'll enter, two of us with shotguns, one woman with a revolver to cover the rear and pick off snipers. We'll give the saloon man 2 or 3 minutes to shut down or not. If not, our birdshot'll clean out the glass on the back bar and not a soul will fight back. They're all as lily-livered as the town's businessmen.
If I had a good posse, I'd get her done fast. I don't. You have to be patient. Beginning at midnight, January 1, I'll be the only man with a badge in the whole blamed county.
Goose Cannon here, out of Cheyenne. You the sheriff?
I am. Cotton Pickens.
Good. We're here to help out. I didn't know if we'd make it in time, but we did. We got hired by the Women's Temperance Union to help you shut down all them saloons at 1 minute after midnight.
Hired?
Yeah, they wired us for help. We're willing to work for anyone, long as we're well paid. We got us some of the best artillerists this side of Possum Creek. The lady said you'd deputize us, just to keep it all on the up and up. We'll just bust in right after midnight and shoot out the lights.
Cannon, that's not what we got cooking here. But thanks for the help.
It don't matter whether you pin badges on us. At 1 minute after midnight, we're gonna shut down Doubtful like it's never been shut down before.
Rusty, this here is Scuffy Scruggs and Ezra Panhandle. They're powder men from the mines. They've got a mess of powder tied outside.
What do you mean, powder?
6 crates of DuPont Hercules dynamite and all the fixings.
Jesus, I'm out of here.
Couldn't be safer. It's just nitro and clay formed into sticks. That's what dynamite is. You'd have trouble blowing up a housefly with it.
They won't tell me why they're here.
They won't say? Oh, it's not your business long as we don't violate the law.
I think it's our business. Why are you on Saloon Row with that stuff?
We're just a couple of wayfarers lost in the cold.
You're a smart ass. What were you there for?
To take a leak. There's an outhouse behind every saloon.
Where were you headed? What's the powder for?
You sure are a nosy one, Sheriff.
All right. I'm escorting you out of town. We're gonna move that powder far from here. Then you're free to return. Turk's Livery can care for the mules if you want.
We're free men. We'll go where we want.
Don't resist, Sheriff. There's a ticket to hell waiting for you if you do.
Head to the alley. Watch the fireworks. See the biggest show in town.
You're resisting arrest.
You stay out of it, and you might live. We're just helping you enforce the law, Sheriff. Call us a posse. Call us friends. Call us the strong arm of the law.
I'll call you men in big trouble.
Now, get out of the saloons. They're all ready to blow.
Is it midnight yet?
Exactly midnight. Happy New Year. The fuse gets lit at the count of three. 1, 2, 3.
Blood Valley 5. Wyoming Slaughter.
Available now in graphic audio.
You just cannot stay out of trouble for any time at all, can you, boy?
Preacher, you sure have good timing.
I always have. Might have showed up a few minutes earlier, though, since you only left one of the varmints for me to kill.
Graphic Audio presents William W. Johnstone's The Family Jensen, number 3, The Violent Land.
Preacher, it is so good to see you again.
Well, it is mighty good to be here.
I'm glad the two of you were able to make it here today. I have a big supper planned.
While you two were flapping your gums, that varmint was about to shoot Preacher in the back.
Oh, no, he wouldn't, Matt. I figured you'd take care of him.
What if I hadn't been paying attention?
Well, I knew you would be. Smoke and meat taught you well enough.
Where'd you say you were from?
Germany. Prussia, to be precise.
What's this about a wagon train?
Baron Friedrich von Hoffmann is our leader. He's taking a large group of settlers to the American states called Wyoming. The Baron has bought a ranch there and intends to establish a town as well.
Sounds like a fellow with big plans.
Oh, hell!
We gotta do something, Smoke. The Baron's had guards posted, but they won't be expecting something like that.
That's why you've got to get around them and warn everybody at the Raptor 9. Your horse is just as fast as mine or Preacher's, and you can organize a defense. There's no time to waste.
What about the two of you?
We're going to follow them. When they attack the ranch, we'll hit them where they least expect it. From behind.
Damn right we will. We'll have those varmints in a trap right where we want them.
It can't be.
I'm about to ride up there and see for myself. Want me to have the boys saddle a horse for you so you can come along with me?
Damned right I do. I want to see this with my own eyes.
It'll mean going onto that foreigner's range.
I don't give a damn about that. Pick out a dozen men to ride with us and tell them to be ready to fight.
Come on, Bat! We'll cover you!
Available now in graphic audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220, or go to www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different Graphic Audio series or want the complete series now, check out our long-haul MP3 series sets, conveniently shipped to you on a USB flash drive. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter, like us on Facebook, or follow us on Twitter.